All right, here we go. Lamechet, I'm an Aleph. So we're continuing along with the issues of Sukkim. So Gemara contains the third line in Lamechet, I'm an Aleph. It says, Amarabi Achabar Ada. Achabar said, Bimarobo and Erzsho Paskin. They divide up this pasuk, which was a single pasuk, into so they divide it up into three psukim. The Gemara in Kedushin actually brings this down with regards to the Gemara there is discussing the division of psukim in the Torah, discussing what's the middle pasuk of the Sefer, what's the middle pasuk of the Torah, and the Gemara says, why don't you just count psukim? And so the Gemara says, we can't count psukim because we're not bekiyim in psukim and how to divide psukim. And even though we think, you know, a pasuk, for instance, like this, is a single pasuk, but Marava and Eretz Yisrael, they divided it up into three psukim. So Amar Rabbi Chama Bachanina, Lo Yishir Moshe Lemi Psulatan Shaluchot. Moshe Rabbeinu only became rich from the waste, the refuse of the Luchot. Shenemar, Psalucha Shnei Luchot Avanim. That Moshe had to carve out or chisel out a new set of luchot avanim karishonim and solotan shel chayehe, and that which is remaining in the refuse of the chiseling will be for you. And the luchot were made out of sanpirion, some precious stone, and he was able to keep the leftovers of the precious stone. And it's interesting, just as a side note, that the pasuk, we always read this psalacha, that Moshe had to re-chisel out the luchot, but it's important that many times, you know, Moshe's action might have been justified in terms of breaking the luchot, and that's, you know, when he brought the first luchot down, but Hashem said that when you take, you know, responsibility, you know, even if he acted appropriately, you have to take responsibility from breaking them and then rectify the situation, not simply admonish, right, or make your point, but you also have to then rectify and make sure that after you've made your demonstration by destroying the luchot, that you have to actually psalacha, that you have to take that responsibility and remake the luchot. Am Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, lo nitna Torah lo Moshe lo Zaro. This is a very interesting line. The Torah was only given to Moshe and his descendants. So in Amar Kedav lecha, psalacha, that it was directed at Moshe, just like psalacha means mapsalotan shelcha, that the leftovers or the discard from the chiseling, it belongs to you. Af ketavan shelcha. Also, the writing is yours. I mean, ketav lecha, mean that it belongs to you. The Torah belongs to you. Moshe nahag ba tovat ayin v'natna l'Yisrael. Moshe was generous, and he decided not only to keep it for himself, but to give it over to the rest of Klal Yisrael. Lava ketuv omer, and that the pasuk says in Tehillim, I mean in Mishlei, Tovayin hu yivorach, one who is generous will be blessed. So Mar says, Meitiv Rav Chista. Now, this is part, I guess, assuming part of this, again, it is brought down here because this pasuk that we had quoted earlier, which is what? Ve'uto ve'otzi tziva Hashem ve'et tehillu lamed etchem. But how do you explain that pasuk? We had this pasuk earlier that ma'ani b'chinam, just like I taught for free, so too you must teach for free. But what do we say the term? How do we define tzivani? Which was, tzivani Hashem. Like Hashem commanded me. Sounds like Hashem commanded him in order to teach Bnei Yisrael. If that's the case, how can you say Moshe was generous in teaching the Torah to Yisrael if he was commanded to teach the Torah to Yisrael? It didn't belong to him. So Gemara answers, well, I made it chem. I'm sorry, Votitziva, right, Hashem commanded me, Vani Lachem, and I did it for you. So that's Tziva Hashem Beiti Lamedetchem, and that was Votitziva Hashem Beitihi, comma, and then I need, you know, Lamedetchem, which is, I decided to teach you. The Tzivui is not on the teaching part, but rather to me, that Hashem commanded the Torah to me, and that's part of what the Ron said yesterday, if you remember when he says, how do we define the term Tzivani? In the pasuk, kashet tzivani, how do we define the term kashet tzivani? We said that it couldn't be that Hashem's commanding him to teach the, to command Bnei Israel or to say that they believe in me. And here you see that the Gemara here is also focused on the fact that Tziva means that teaching, or from here that Hashem commanded me to learn the Torah, and then I taught it to you on my own volition. So this is the pasuk we quoted. Again, the Gemara says, how do we explain this pasuk again, which seems to say, Hashem taught me, Hukimush Batim, Kashir Tivani Hashem, like Hashem commanded me. What does that mean, commanded me? So it sounds like commanded me to teach you. So it again says, Oti Tiva. No, the Tivui was to me to learn the Torah. I need Lachem and I give it to you. Now what are you going to do with this? Plus at the end of the Devarim, Azina Bataya, Kitvu Lachem et Hashira Zot. Right? You should write down Hashem. Now it's clear that Moshe is commanding him that you should write down this Shira. So my answer is up. That's no problem. Ashira Lachuda. Yeah. He did command them to write down the Shira. But what did he command them to do? To write the Shira. Not anything more. I mean, the Shira is simply the Shira Tazinu and not the rest of the Torah. So that he was commanded to give over to Bnei Israel, but not the rest of the Torah. So where it says, well, it says, Laman Tiedli Ashira Zot La'ed B'Bnei Israel. In order this, Shira will be a testimony to me regarding Bnei Israel. I mean, it seems that the Shira is not simply about itself, but it's encompassing a much larger body, and obviously meaning the Torah. I mean, kids will come at the Shira Zot, the Yud La'ed, that Bnei Israel will keep the Torah. If that's the case, then Hashem is commanding Moshe to do something that will ensure that Bnei Israel have the Torah. If that's the case, then it doesn't sound like Moshe did it out of his own volition or of his own goodness of his heart, but rather Hashem is commanding him to give the Torah. So Gemara rejects this Havamina, which in many senses it's an amazing Havamina.
Torah Tziva Lana Moshe.
Moshe Shaki Lati Yaakov. That could do
it. Tziva Lana Moshe.
Right. You could, again, define it the same way the Gemara has been doing all along, that Moshe gave it to us, yeah. In the end, he did give it to us, but the question is, did Hashem tell him to give it to us?
But the Marasha Kielas Yaakov was problematic.
Right, well, once he gave it over. But yeah, the Havamina itself is strange. It's the whole idea that the Torah would only belong to Moshe and his family, that was Hashem's intent, and then he was gifted it to Bnei Israel.
Well, after the Chidegel, that was the suggestion that Ben Hashem made, right?
Right.
I'll destroy them and I'll build a new Av just from you and your descendants.
Right. No, it's a good point. I was thinking of that. I was just going to be able to say that, but I think it's a great point. But the problem is that it comes after Har Sinai, right? So there is, you could say that Hashem had such a concept that Moshe himself would be the Am, but it is after Har Sinai when all of Israel saw, right, the people of the Torah, and again, it's a strange Havamina. So the Gemara's conclusion.
Maybe on that end, he can even interpret the Havamina, you know, it says that Moshe, in his goodness, that Moshe argued with Hashem at that point and convinced Hashem, you know, not to destroy Bnei Israel, and therefore, you know, that it should be not just Moshe's descendants, but also for all of Bnei Israel.
Right. Although Hashem commands, Matem Tzu, Mamlecha Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. It's good that Hashem has bigger plans for Bnei Israel and that for Moshe alone, but it's just amazing Havamina here. The Gemara's conclusion is also interesting. It says, Ella, so we can't say that it was just Moshe who got the Torah, Ella Pilpula B'Alma. That's the Gemara's conclusion, that Moshe was given uniquely Pilpula B'Alma, and that he gave over as a gift to Bnei Israel. So what's Pilpula B'Alma? And so then Rashi here says, Pilpula B'Alma is L'Havin Davar Mitoch Davar. Be able to, which is interesting because able to expand in some sense of the Torah, be able to understand one thing from the next. I mean, to draw inference, to be able to apply the Torah to a broader, you know, or issues, or understanding issues, not just in themselves, but the. Right. Havana. Right. Havin is to. Havin davar mitoch davar. So that's one possibility. That's what Rashi suggests. The Rosh writes it's Havana v'Harifut, it's understanding and sharpness. V'hainu katvan shalcha ki kol ha-chokma v'asechel. It's interesting. All chokma and wisdom remuzim b'ktav ha-Torah b'tzurat ha-Otiyot. It's remuzim the Torah in the shape of the letters. That's what the Rosh says, you can find everything in the Torah, and that's Havanah and Harifut, and Moshe's ability to draw conclusions or understanding from the Torah itself to, I guess, a broader set of issues, that was unique to Moshe, which he then gifted to Bnei Yisrael. It almost has a Kabbalistic ring to it. The idea that, you know, the Tzruat HaOtiyot can give one understanding about all the Chochmah and Seichel out there.
Well, that, we have that in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, that there was this Torah Shebaal Peh was commanded to Moshe. Moshe taught to the, you know, there was a chain, and it started with Moshe.
Right, the Masorah, right.
So sure. Is that what he's referring to? It seems to be.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Rashi. That's possible. It's Rashi. The idea, the ability, or the smicha that a person can then, once they have the understanding of Torah Shebaal Peh, can then paskin and quote unquote innovate in the sense that they can take cases that are not explicitly within the, you know, mentioned in Torah Shebaal Peh and apply Dinei Torah. That's possible. I'm not sure that's what the Rosh is after. The Rosh is, it seems that any Chochman Seichel are found in the Tzuret Otiyot. I don't know Tzuret Otiyot.
But what he's saying is that Moshe had that exclusively.
Right.
And but, he passed it on to...
But he gifted it. Well, there's a difference about... I mean, that the Mishnah Avos doesn't say that Moshe was not commanded to give it over. I mean, that the Mishnah Avos says Moshe got it from Hashem, and then he gave it to Yoshua. And that doesn't mean that he did it on his own volition. It means that Hashem gave it to him to give to Yoshua to pass it along. Whereas the way the Gemara is suggesting here is that Moshe did it of his own volition. I mean, that Hashem gave it to Moshe and it would have stopped there.
That puts a little bit of a different perspective even on the Medrash, you know, that Moshe went and then saw Rabbi Akiva darshaning, and even the, you know, the
Tagging Show.
And he knew what he was talking about. So, now, if you think of it, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, it was supposed to be his altogether, you know, only his, and he gave it over. Now he doesn't even know what they're talking about.
Right.
It's,
good, very good. Alright, so there's a Rosh, the Rashi, it's interesting, Mark. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Ain't a Kaddish Baruch Hu Mashre Shekhinato ala Gibor Ashir v'Chacham v'Anav. Hashem is only Mashre Shekhina on someone as a Gibor, an Ashir, a Chacham and an Anav, v'Kulan mi Moshe. We learn these all out from Moshe, Gibor. How do you know that Moshe was a Gibor? The Chetiv. But he froze it to Ohel ala Mishkan. The Moshe placed the Ohel being the, you know, the cover, ala Mishkan. But Amar Mar, Moshe Rabbeinu Pirso, that Moshe himself did it. V'chtiv, Eser Amot HaKeresh, that each of the boards that was the walls of the Mishkan were of the area of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Ohel itself, were 10 Amot high, and that Moshe was able to then place the Ohel, place the curtains or the sheets on top of the Ohel by himself. That means that he had to be able to reach above and spread out the ten amot. So Gemara says, well, how can you conclude from this that he was a gibor? Okay. Why? Maybe.
He was big.
Right. Ema, the arich, v'katim. Maybe he was tall and lanky. That's what Gemara said. Maybe tall. That all it proves is that he was tall. Doesn't prove that he was strong. Because all he had to do was be able to reach up to the ten amot, but doesn't prove that he was strong. Gemara says, arich, v'katim. Long and lanky, tall and lanky. Ella, min adein krav. We have it from this pasuk. T'chtiv et pos b'shnei aluchot. I grabbed the two luchot, ve'ashlichem yal shtei yadayim. I threw them down with my two hands, ve'ashbereim, v'nechem, and I broke them. So from this, we see the Moshe that they were made out of. The luchot were made out of sanpiru and a very, you know, precious stone, but a rock, a stone that was heavy. V'tanya, luchot arkan shisha. Right, that luchot were six t'vachim long, rachvan shisha. And they were six wide. The avion shlosha, and they were three thick. So they were a significant piece of stone. And Moshe, in order to break them, so they were sempurion, which is a very strong stone. And he had to, in order to break them, he had to pick them up and throw them down with force in order to smash the luchot. So from there we see that Moshe was a gibor. So now, Ashir. How do we know that Moshe was a Ashir? So that was the lima that we learned above. That
the, Moshe chased away all the other the other Roim.
Roim.
It was one against many. And he shows some... Mm-hmm. Well, they could have all been whips, I guess. There's no brain.
So the... next is the... So we have... now, Ashir and Gibor, Chacham. There are 50 levels of Bina in the world. All of them are given to Moshe except for one. Yeah, that was the Ashir, which we had done above. Ashir, these wealthies, Psalachab, Psalatan, Shalachay, Yehay, that the leftovers, the discards will belong to you from the chiseling of the Luchot. So that's how you became wealthy. There are 50 levels of Bina in the world. Moshe has all of them except one, Shenemar, and Tehillim, which talks about Moshe Rabbeinu Taksareh, Me'at Me'elukim, that he was just a little short of being Elukim. And what is that? Taksareh Me'at, that one level that he was missing to reach the understanding that Hashem would have. Anav, how do you know he was in Anav? Dechtiva Ish Moshe Anav Me'od, right? That's explicit in the Pasuk. So, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Nevi'im Ashirim Hayu. All the Nevi'im were wealthy. Min Alon, how do you know? So we have examples. Mi Moshe, Mi Shmuel, Mi Amos, Umi Yona. From all of these. Moshe, Dechtiv Lo Chamor Achad Mehem Nasati. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's speaking at the top, right by Adas Korach, he says, Lo Chamor Achad Mehem Nasati. I didn't take one chamor from them. Meaning that when he was working the service of Bnei Israel, coming back to Mitzrayim, he didn't take any chamor of theirs to use. So Moshe says, Iblo Agro. But if he didn't pay for it, when he's saying, I never took a chamor without paying for it. What is he coming to say? Look, I'm a really good guy. I didn't steal any chamorim, but, you know, that was my big mila. What type of mila is that? That he didn't take from people without paying them? Ela, the people of Agra, then even renting it from them or paying them for the service, he didn't do it. Why? Because he was wealthy. He had his own possessions. He had his own donkey to ride on, and he didn't need anybody else's help. So when it says, don't him shum to anihu. How can you prove from this that he was wealthy? It just says that he couldn't pay or he did not pay to rent out a chamor from someone. You may not be able to rent a chamor for two reasons. You may not need it because you're wealthy, or you may not be able to because you are poor. So how is that a raya that Moshe was rich? Ella, min psaldecha, psalatan yeheshalcha. So this is the same limud that we've had now. It's the third time on this amud that the psalat, the discards belong to Moshe Rabbeinu.
I'm interested that Moshe Rabbeinu's tent was over some precious stone.
I don't recall it.
Moshe. I was confused.
Moshe had the chtiv, right? We did Moshe. Some say Shmuel. Shmuel the chtiv. I don't know Shmuel. So Shmuel makes a very similar statement to Moshe. Hine anu bi neged Hashem. Right? He's speaking to the people. He's saying, you know, you say before Hashem, v'negi mishicho, et shor mila kachti, v'chamor mila kachti. Whose chamor did I ever take? So again, the Gemara asks, ibechinam, if he's saying I didn't take anybody's shor chamor without paying them for it, lafuge ma deshaka b'chinam? Say, I'm a really good guy, I wasn't a gazlan, I didn't take anything for free, no. Oh, dafilu b'schar, no, I didn't even rent anybody's possessions. So Gemara says, dilma da'ani abu. Again, the same problem they have with Moshe. Maybe he didn't take, he didn't rent from them because he couldn't afford to rent from them. Elmi Hacha says in the pasuk Chubatar Ramatah Kisham Beito that he returned to the Ramatah where he was born Kisham Beito because that was his house. And why this is a limud? A number of reasons, but one of them is Chubatar Ramatah Kisham Beito. But was that really his house? Wasn't his house in the Mishkan? Didn't his mother take a neder that he would be shkon be ol Hashem? So how could it be Beito here? So that must be Amarava Kol Makom Shalach Beito Imo. Anywhere he went, his house was with him. Meaning that he was wealthy enough that he could make his house anywhere. Meaning that anywhere he went, he could buy whatever he needed or he took whatever he needed. He had enough possessions to
American Express card.
Right. That he was ready to go. So
you can say that the other way also. He had so few possessions that everything he carried on his back was everything he had.
Right, but here, Beito is a term, right, that is, Beito, I mean, I think you could say such a thing, but the term Beito has more significance. Beito is something permanent, something that has, you know, a sense of having, rather than not having, right? So, Amarov, Gadol Mash Nemar B'Shmuel Yoter Mish Nemar B'Moshe. That what's said by Shmuel is even greater than what's said by Moshe. Nasati sound is meaning that I did not put into service. I did not take against their will. Against their will, I didn't take something Even if they were willing, lo sachu, I did not rent it from them. Right, you did not put us to work, mina shaktanu, velo ritzotanu, and even ratzon, even asking us to do anything, you did not. Right, because, meaning that even if you ask and the person willingly rents it to you, it might be done against their will. Why? Because they feel bad. I mean, imagine Moshe Rabbeinu comes over to you and says, can I borrow your chamor? You know, what's the chances you're going to say no to him? So that's the Gemara says here, that Moshe Rabbeinu says, I didn't press anybody to lend me anything. But if I asked, it sounds like he might have done it. Whereas Shmuel says, not only did I not press anybody for that, but I did not even ask them willingly to give me a chamor. Now, Amos, how do we know that Amos was wealthy? Dictiv, Payan Amos, Vayomer Lamatia, lo Navi Anochi, Velopet Navi Anochi, I'm not a Navi, not the son of a Navi, who Boker Anochi, who Boles Shkamim. Now I'm a Boker and a Boles Shkamim. What is that? Kidiv Targim, Rabbi Yosef, Are, Mare Geteana, I am a man of many cattle, right, of flocks, of great flocks. Ushkamim li b'shveluta, and I have sycamores in the valley in the shvela. So that he was a man of means. Yonad echtiv. How do we know that Yonad was wealthy? V'itenskara v'yaradba. It says when he went to the boat, he hires the boat, right? V'yaradba, and he went into it. Rav Yochanan shetan skara shel spina kula. He paid for the whole boat. Because the psukim, if you look over there, the boat just was going to Tarshisha, right? He wanted to run away, and the boat had just come into the dock, and he gets on the boat, and they're ready to go right away. So how could it be that they were ready to go right away? I mean, they usually wait to fill up with passengers. It says, Vaitenska Rava Yeredba. He goes in, and then they're ready to go because he paid. And say that the captain says to him, I have to wait to fill out the rest of the boat. He says to him, I'll pay you for whatever you're missing. Let's get on the road. So he pays. Vaitenska Rava Yeredba. Rabbi Yochanan Shetenska Rashel Svinakula. Amar Rabbi Rominus, it's an interesting name. I don't know if we've ever seen that before. Rabbi Rominus, Skarash al Tzvina, Avia Dalit Alfim Dinare Zahava. That it was 4,000 gold coins, this, rental. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Betchila Yemoshe, Omei Torah, Omushkacha. Right, that in the beginning, Moshe would learn Torah and then forget it. It was given to him as a gift. It was given to Moshe when he finished speaking to him. Why only when he finished speaking to him? He was up there learning the whole time. What does that mean? So that was Vayitan. Hashem gave it to him at that point as a matana that he was able to remember it and hold on to it when he finished learning. So again, the idea that one has to put in the hishtadlus, right, to learn and to make the effort, and then ozim lo min hashamayim. Right, once a person makes the effort, then from in Hashem's mind, they help him to do "quote unquote" more than he's even capable of doing. Right, very good. Come on, brachos. Very nice. All right. So now the Mishnah continues from above that someone who's mudar now, what's he allowed to do? So one of the items is zanet ishto bepanav. He's allowed to feed the person's wife and his children. Afal pi shu chayav bezanotam. Even though he's chayav to feed them, even though the individual who's mudar now is chayav to feed them, you can still feed them. Right? The Rosh points out here that chayav only goes on his wife, because he's not chayav. It's a mitzvah to feed his children, but not that he's chayav to feed his children. Right, so the Gemara says that banav, that means that really young kids under the age of six, then he might be chayav to feed them. Alright, so that's a good question. That's a very good question. So some of the Rishonim believe that this is only according to Kanan. The Ran and the Tosfos here mention that it can even go according to the Rabbanan. That even according to the Rabbanan here, it works because it depends. The Ran has an unusual.
What did Kanan say?
What?
Kanan.
I was telling my close we had a bubble with Kanan and the Rabbanan about someone who goes in and Zan, a person's wife. He leaves, goes overseas, leaves his wife behind, and a person goes ahead and feeds his wife in the interim.
Right.
So, Rechanan says, and he's basically
to
repay him, so that he's out of luck. There's a chum saying out that he stood up, he took care of the guy's wife, that he's got to repay him. So we look at Naran. Right. So the Ran says, "Vafilu ki rabbanan." So even going to rabbanan, achid v'torat mitzvah askinan. Talking about the case of it's a mitzvah. Below b'torat kiron shabal, he didn't pay it expecting repayment. Shechayav is menoteim. Right, and that is according to Ran, hana memelahi happens by itself. So now that happens by itself, meaning that he is just doing a mitzvah. Taking care of this woman doesn't have what to eat. He just stands up. He's a good guy, and he gives her money to eat. Exactly. Or he thought, he assumed that the husband would repay him. Over here, he's not assuming that he will be repaid. And therefore, yes, then it turns into be mavriach harim, nechasav. And again, that he is basically just preventing him from having to deal with an obligation, but not that he's actually doing something that is directly at her.
Even if he is mehane, right. He's shlucho shel makom.
In what sense? Why? Because he's
it's a mitzvah.
Mitzvah, right? You mean that it's mitzvah lav hena? Right. So we've talked about it in the past. What does that really mean? Mitzvah lav hena? Right. So we don't. That's not clear. Right. That's machlokes we shown and that we saw earlier in the Darim. That's it's more apparent. It's more explicit in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah. There, the Rosh and others. Discuss the fact that whether if you do get hana from mitzvah, do we say mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu? I mean that mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu means just in general we don't assume that there's hana when you move the hana. But if there is physical hana from the mitzvah, do we still say that mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu when there is physical hana?
Where is it? All the being. Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't give the example of five of them.
Because we learned four or five of them where they mean that
all of them.
I think the Gemara's point, I when I was thinking about the Gemara here and I said about Moshe above all, so that Moshe was wealthy, that I think that wealth, in this week's parashah, we have a Yitro also, that he wanted to pick, Anshe Chayil, people are wealthy, that wealth indicated a certain amount of independence. Mm-hmm. Right? Their ability to...
Who are sheared.
Right? but here the Gemara does not give examples of such. The Gemara gives directed examples of wealth. But I think the idea of independence, that the Navi would be independent of outside influences, meaning that he's able to represent the Sham without having to worry about what other people think and what other people say.
I guess also they get, like, if his beged is dirty, it's like, Kilu is Chayim Misa. In other words, you're representing Hashem, there is a certain significance to...
Right, the way you present yourself. Right, that our neighbors
seen
but she's still in a lot of Hasidic circles, and that they dress in a manner that they befits the, this is where the Kohanei Hashem, and we have to dress in a manner that befits being the Am Hashem. Right. So we have to, but I think what I was thinking about over here about the Vim and the Moshe Rabbeinu, and then as we spoke again, the Ashirim indicates a certain amount of independence. So I don't know if, again, I mean, by other Nevi'im, if you see, Yirmiyahu was very independent. It meant that he gets himself into a lot of trouble, right, by being independent, speaking his mind. So he has that type of independence. I'm not saying whether wealthy or not wealthy, but I thought that maybe the line of reasoning of the Gemara here, that to show that the Nevi'im were able to just speak B'Av Hashem without the outside influences of the Am or the pressures of the Am to respond to them in a manner that was not what Hashem said to them and not what Hashem wanted.
Isn't it interesting that the example by Moshe Rabbeinu, Solacha, it was, Moshe did a lot of nevuah by the time he got to that point, where right. if that was what made him wealthy, there you go, so he grew up in the palace of
Paro. And he was also, I think if you look, carefully, that after that point, Moshe runs into a lot of leadership issues at that point. That's, until that point, they had some light complaints and a couple little issues, but, after the, Egel and all that, Moshe runs into through, a whole Sefer Bamidbar, and you have Moshe's leadership gets challenged over and over again. Okay. Alright. Okay, so the Tosfos also says that this, even according to the Chum, but he says there that, like the Rabbanim, we're talking about mizonot yitzeirot. Extra mizonot. He doesn't feed her core mizonot. She has core mizonot, but he gives her, dessert. He gives her extra food, which is not necessary. So in that case, he's not really mahana the baal, because the baal is not really chayav. I'm not exactly sure he explains that, because the Mishnah says he's chayav. The baal is chayav. Chayav is an otan. So I don't know if that means a loose term, that he's chayav is an otan, even though when he's giving them excess mizonot, it's not enough.
But the baal is chayav to to provide on the level of
she's accustomed to.
She's accustomed to.
Right.
So, or what he's able to provide, right? Or if he's wealthy. So.
I don't know what Mizanot means. That's it's an interesting term in general because. I guess that's in the excess of Ramat Yadayim. I'm not sure what the Mizanot Yatirot are here in Kranta Tosfos. Alright. He should not feed his animal, whether it's a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal. He's allowed to feed his non-kosher animal, but he cannot feed his kosher animal. Why does it matter whether it's a kosher animal or not kosher animal? A kosher animal, the nefesh goes up to Shemayim and a gufo shalom, and you're able to eat the animal. Tmeya, as by a non-kosher animal, go nafsha b'gufa l'shamayim. Nothing belongs to you, meaning that you can't eat any of it. Samulo, ava tmeya, nafsha l'shamayim gufo shalom. I said, what are you talking about? Even by a tmeya, by a non-kosher animal, they both belong to him. Why? Shem yitzit. Harihu mochra lo b'de kuchavim. He can sell to a non-Jew. Right? Oh. Machila leklavim, or you could sell it up to dog for dogs to eat. All right, what is going on in this Mishnah? All right, now these all seem to be like items where he's giving him hana. I mean, he's feeding his animals, feeding his kids, his wife. I mean, these are not like don't seem to be little items. So the way Rashi explains this Mishnah, as well as the Gemara, the subsequent Gemara we're going to go into, is Rashi says there's something called hana merupa and hana muatet. There's a small amount of hana and there's a large amount of hana. When you take a neder, a person only restricts hanam ruba. Anything that's hanam mu'etet, a small amount of hanah, that is not restricted by the neder that he takes. And that's how Rashi explains all of these items. Feeding his kids, that's kind of little, that's like a small token that he's taking with them, because, you know, they can eat a little bit and they're fine. They don't have to eat a lot. When you're talking about animals, when you're talking about feeding animals, we have to fatten them up, right, in order that they grow big and eat, that they eat a tremendous amount of food. That is hanah. Miruba. In contrast, I mean, that's the contrast in the Mishnah between the animals and the children and the wife. How much they eat, right? Obviously, all of this is relative. But, assuming that the kids and the wife eat only a limited amount, and the animals eat extraordinary amounts, right? There's a difference in level, I know. And Rashi will continue this line of thought throughout the Gemara here. The, others explain, like we saw by Tosfos and by the Rosh a little bit, that these are just the idea here is that he's not giving him any hana at all. And why is he not giving him any hana? Either because of chanan, like you suggested, that it's chanan here, which says when you feed their children, it's not relevant. And here, by feeding the animals are for work. They're not for fattening up, especially a non-kosher animal. It's not going to be eaten. It's used for working with. If you fatten it up, it's actually it's a deficit. It's not even helpful. That's one way to learn.
Enabling his animal to be robust to
work. Right. So that would be seem to be the case. So that's what the Ron here concludes. The Ron has a different way of going. And the Ron suggests over here that when we're talking about these animals, we are talking about mizonos yitzerim, kedei lefatma. Not its core mizonos, like you're suggesting, Shoal. If you're giving him core mizonos, you're allowing him to work. Meaning that if you feed the basic mizonos to an animal is allowed to eat. So the Ron says that we're not talking about that core mizonah, we're talking about the excess mizonah which are used to fatten up the animal. And that's where Rabbi Elezer allows you to fatten up the animal by a non-kosher animal, because the fattening up of the animal is not a benefit to the Baal, because that's what he uses the animal for. But anything that's necessary for the animal to work, that would not be allowed, even according to Rabbi Elezer. So the Ron sees your issue, so, and he goes that derech of saying that everything here is talking about Yisero, talking about the extra that with the animal, with regards to the animals. Right, so Gemara is going to continue here. Am Rabbi Yitzchak bar Chananya, Am Rav Huna, Amudar Chana Mechavero, Mutar Lasilo Bito. Someone who's Mudar Chana from his friend, he can marry his daughter. So what does it mean? Habibo, who's also to who? Right, so what's this? Arizer, but Mayatskinim, what's the case? Ilay Mimishin Nechse Aviakala, the father of the bride, are Surmela Chatan. The possessions of the father of the bride are usher to the chatan. So the father-in-law ushered his future son-in-law in his possessions. Right? Ari moser lo shivcha l'shem sho. When he gives over a maidservant to his daughter to go work, that shivcha is also going to work for the husband. So it's clearly he's giving a benefit, so that can't be the case. Ella must be the other way around, that the nichsei chatan are surim al-vi akala. the future son-in-law's possessions are asur on the father-in-law. So what's he benefiting him? He said, oh, because he's feeding his daughter. Until this point, the father had to feed the daughter. Now, the son-in-law is going to feed the daughter. I says, gedolo mizu amru. I mean, what's that big deal? Zanet ishto v'fanav, af bishu chayav v'zonotan. I mean, that we have here where a third party can come in, a person who is asur and anah, the gamre, right, and has no shaykhus to his wife and children, and he can feed the wife and children. You're saying to me, this future son-in-law who's going to marry this woman, that's going to be obligated in her mizonot in the future, that even beforehand, when he gives her mizonot, that's some sort of hanah? I mean, you can do that even when you have a woman that you have no connection to, or in the family you have no connection to. So that can't be the issue. So, Ella, what? Back to the original assumption where the father-in-law's possessions are assured to the future son-in-law. We're not talking about a katana or somewhere where her father's marrying her off, but rather where she marries herself off. Right? She's marrying herself off out of her own will or her own volition. Midata. So now what's the chiddush? I mean, so, now if she's in her own possession, she's marrying herself off, what's the chiddush? Right? He's not doing anything. So Rashi suggests over here that even though he advised her, I mean, she comes to her father and says, should I marry this guy? And he says, yeah, go ahead. Or he says, you know, says that you should marry this guy, gives her advice, and she accepts the advice, that's still not considered that the father-in-law is being mahane, this future son-in-law. Because she's still out of her own will. Again, I would have said because she could make her own decision. The fact that she could refuse his advice, and if she accepts his advice, that's not really necessarily hanah, because she is, in the end, she can make the decision. Rashi, Lishitato, says over here, yeah, there is a little hanah when he pushes her in that direction, when he pushes her to go marry this guy, but, lav hanah, dahani leit, and ela hanah mu'etet. Again, Rashi says it's a small amount of hanah when he pushes her in that direction. Right, so.
That's a good wife
she has. The fact that she's giving advice, right, so that does have an impact, that the father is promoting a certain individual to be the husband. Right, so that has value. Rashi says, again, it's hanah mu'etet. I think the other Rishonim here learned that it's because... it's not directed. I mean, that your girls make your own decision. Right, her decision.
Could this go at all to the question that we've dealt with a number of times before, like, on who the Isser, you know, devolves? Because if the father-in-law prohibited benefit from him to the Chatan, is it the Chatan's obligation, you know, to then not get any benefit from the father's possessions, right, or is it, because if it's that way, so then I can see there, you know, why it's a chiddush, because whether the father is doing anything or not, still it's his daughter, and the Chatan is benefiting from it. But if it's the other way around, and the father's not really doing anything, then there should be no problem,
Well, either way, either he is giving hanah or he's not giving hanah. I mean, one's a beneficiary, one's the giver. So no matter who the obligation devolves on, right, meaning that there's one of the two of them is in violation, I mean, depending who you hold, like, but one of the two of them is in violation, and there's an interaction between them, which is that one is giving some benefit and the other one is receiving that benefit. Question of who's chayav, the giver or the receiver, the one who took the nether or the receiver, that's, I think, a different issue than whether there's actually hanah here. All right, so now, another interesting case. All right, Tanya Nami Ochu, we have a price like this. Listen to this case here. Amudar Anami Chaveru, Asur Lasilo Beito, Avag Misio Beito, Begirat Midata. So again, supports our position here. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amadir Beno, the Talmud Torah. Amazing case. What is that? Father says, you may get no benefit, you may not benefit me at all, in order that he should learn. So listen to this. Father does not want his son to waste any time taking care of him and doing anything for him. He says, you may not give me any hanah in order that he will fully dedicate himself to learning Torah. So father pushing the son to learn Torah. He says, don't do anything, don't feed me, don't do anything, don't work, don't bring me any money, don't bring me any gifts. Just go and learn Torah. That's what the father says. So then he says, my dear Torah, mutul malot lo chavit shamayim, you can still bring his father water. We'll have the glow at the there and provide a candle for him. He's like, he can even roast for him a small fish. Why is this? Why can he do all these items? So there's one of two possibilities. One possibility is that that this was not included in his nether. That's what the Rosh suggests here, that he took a nether, he meant big things. I don't want you doing any big things for me, because that'll take away from your learning of Torah. But small little token items, that's not what was included in the, that was not included in the original nether. So right, so the way the Rosh, as the other term learned, is that it's the nether that we are defining what's the extent of the nether. His intent was to make him learn Torah, not to have him feed him a ton of stuff. And therefore, when he does little token items, that's not what the nether was about. The nether was generally about bringing him up for Torah, and he's still free for Torah when he does these little token items for his father. Whereas Rashi is going to go to Shitato and say, what? This is only a Hana Mu'eta. And when someone's restricted in Hana, it only means Hana Mu'ba and not Hana Mu'eta. Rashi is going to say it is Hana, but, and it's just that the Dorim don't include Hana Mu'eta. It's not unique. So this nether, it's just that's a general principle in Nidorim. The Rosh.
And it would have been the fact that he has a mitzvah of Kibbutz and mitzvah Slav and Hanos. So he's doing it for Rosh. He's not doing it to provide Hanah.
Right, well, that's not. The Kibbutz of Aim might have. That's a Martin Kedushin. We'll get there, but the question of Kibbutz of Aim, whether what the son really has to do for the father, has to do out of the father's possessions. Out of his own possessions, what are the obligations that on the son? And we know that in the Dorim, one is able to, by doing a Sheva Apase, abrogate a mitzvah. I mean, that person takes a nether that will prevent them from doing a mitzvah, that is fully in effect. I mean, that it will take effect. Right. So that you have a nether here that's such. Okay. The Rosh does it offer an alternative shot here in the Gemara. He says, the Yesh Mepharshim is a case where his son did not learn Torah. That he was a slacker. And his father says that you're asking for Hanah, right, unless you go and learn Torah. I mean, that you can't give me any Hanah, I don't want anything from you until you go and start learning. Right, so there again, the idea that he's able to give him these small token items, because that's not what he intended. He intended not to have a big relationship with him, a full relationship with him, but not these little token items. Alright, let's finish up the Gemara here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mudar Anami Chavero Mutzal Ashkoto Kosh Shalom. It's an extension of what we just said here. Someone who's mudar enough from his avero, he can give him a kos shel shalom, a cup of peace. Mind you, what's the cup of peace? One possibility is that is the wine they used to drink in the house of the avel. The other possibility is it's what the kos shel beit hamerchatz, the hot water, the warm water that they cooked up for the beit hamerchatz. So now, what does that mean, kos shel shalom? Why is he allowed to give him a kos shel shalom? So Rav says, kos shel shalom is something that mitarchi shalom. Something, it's a nimus, right? It's a cultural expectation that people would act in this way between each other. And you do it mitarchi shalom, not to benefit the person. And, you know, people take care of each other. People bring over, like tenchumim, they bring over wine. If you menachem the avel, they used to drink in their day. There was a gzera later on that they no longer would drink wine at the base of avel because they were getting drunk. And, right, was not turning out to be exactly what they wanted. But originally the idea was he drank wine to forget the sorrows. So that would be considered. You mean paying a shiva call would be, or normally that you'd send, you know, like a person has today a cultural, you know, in outside, not Jewish circles, but they send a cigar when a boy is born. They, you know, I mean that idea that when someone has an avelus, that they'd send them a kos yayin. So that's a tachay shalom. It's a way, it's a nimus. Right, it's a cultural, proper behavior, etiquette, but not that it's being mehanahim. That's one possibility. That's where the Ron seems to learn. The other possibility, Rashi again says, what? Hana mu'etet. It's a small amount of hanah, that's not an issue. Right, and the Rosh says that mitzvah ka'ovit. It's a mitzvah to help the, you know, the, to bring the wine to the avel is a mitzvah. But lo matin lei kol kach la'avel ki merubim mashotim. There are lots of drinkers there. Right, it's not just the avel is going to drink, so you bring this cup of wine, that cup of wine is not necessarily going to go to the avel, or all of it's not going to go to the avel, it's going to everyone who is present. And since it's going to go to everyone who is present, right, that is, you know, sufficient to consider it not to be hanah for the beneficiary. Alright. Just to finish off the Gemara. Ladies and gentlemen, you're not allowed to feed his animals. Tanya Rabishua, Ish Uza Omer, Zana Vadav Shikhota Vaknanim. You're allowed to feed his avadim and shvachos. The lady said, "Ben tov, ben tmiyah, ben torah." But you can't feed his animals. So my time, what's the difference between animals and avadim and shvachos? Avadav u'shvachotav akanim, leman charuta avdina. They're made for two possibilities. One is work, or the other one is for to explain the word mancharuta. It either means work, or to clean the house, or I mean that mancharuta means to breathe, meaning that to stand up and breathe. You know, they're not made to be fattened up like animals. They're there to be alive, right? So, but animals are made to be fattened up. So again, why is that not considered being mahanehim? So Rashi is going to say hana muetet again, right? Said a small amount of hana. The Ran is going to learn like a shita that this does not mean kor mizonos, because kor mizonos gives them energy to work, and that wouldn't be the case. This is going to be excess mizonos, right? The way he explained up in the Mishnah. Right, but the other Rishonim are going to explain that this, according to Hanan, that here you're not, when he has an obligation to feed, right, that doesn't, when you go in and step in into that obligation, he doesn't owe you any money, and therefore you're just being mavriachari and not providing him directed hana, just the hana memela that comes to him. So, all right, we'll stop here.